Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score! Hit and Run Sundays from 9 a.m. till noon.
Sheets into left center. Green looks up. Gavin Sheets takes it up and out. And a 3-0, 3-0 lead. On the ground up the middle, and this is another run. RBI single, Tim Anderson, 7-0. Center field, Robert back at the track. That is it. The Sox shut out the Tigers. Johnny Cueto was awesome today.
Stretch by Kershaw, the 2-2. Ground ball to short. Heading home, Wisdom to throw to the plate. Not in time. The ball bounces away. Horner goes to second. Wisdom gets up limping. Horner overruns the bag and now gets back to second. Cubs take the lead. Here's the 3-1. A fly ball to deep center field. Back goes Velasquez. And that's a home run. Jake Lamb homers for the second night in a row. And this one ties the game in the seventh inning. And the pitch, a swing and a looper, shallow right field, base hit. It's going to drive in one. It's going to drive in two. A little looper over the head of Morrell into shallow right.
And the 1-2.
That swings and misses. Strike three and the ball game is over. Greg Kimbrel with save number 387. And the Dodgers have won three in a row over the Cubs here in this series. The final again. The Los Angeles Dodgers 4 and the Chicago Cubs 2.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Good morning, baseball people. What's happening? It is just after 9 o'clock on an unbelievably beautiful Sunday morning. Have there been a lot of them, or is it just the way that it feels when I wake up and I get to talk baseball with people? It's very difficult to tell for sure. I suppose we could look at the weather history. Good morning, Sean Sears. How are you?
I'm great, Speaks. How about yourself, man?
Oh, I'm freaking delightful. Come on now. I'm absolutely delightful. Spent the whole day at the ballpark yesterday. The whole day and the whole night at the ballpark. Shooting something for Marquee. People might remember I did a little thing for Marquee last year about the Dead and Company show called On the Marquee. Doing a few more of those this summer about concerts. So yesterday I had a chance to hang out with a couple members of the Zac Brown Band and the road crew for the Zac Brown Band and talk baseball and music.
Sounds like a tough day, man.
It is so my jam.
Right. That's so you, man.
It is. Oh, God. I don't know that I'll have a happier professional moment than sitting for 25 minutes and talking to the violin player from the Zac Brown Band, Jimmy DeMartini, just about like catchers as drummers, bass players as first basemen, Zac Brown being the starting pitcher / general manager of that band, stuff like that, what it's like to play music in a ballpark and stand at center field and look around and feel like you're in charge of the place, how the music blasts from the outfield to the to behind the plate and up to the press box and comes back, how it's sort of a natural amphitheater. Those guys love playing ballparks. Just tremendous conversation. That'll be on Marquee at some point in the next, I don't know, next month or so, something like that. And then went to the show last night, so had a great time. Had plenty of time in the afternoon to catch Johnny Cueto, which we'll talk about a lot. And then after the concert, got home and watched the end of Cubs and Dodgers and caught up on the rest of all of that, including Marcus Stroman's start, Drew Smyly's start today, as things are looking better for the Cubs in terms of getting some of the pitchers back in the rotation. But in terms of the wins and losses, not so much. But it is, and the White Sox overall, we know all their issues systemically. What I'm trying to say is, folks, is that I feel great. It's 9:05 in the morning, and I hope you feel great on a glorious day. And let's talk baseball over the course of the next 3 hours. We've got a packed show. I'm going to invite you in a matter of moments because I love to take your calls and talk to you guys and you girls on a Sunday morning. And this is probably the best time to do it. So if there's things you want to talk about in terms of the Cubs and Sox, we'll do it. And I'll give you a little specific thing to talk about in a minute. But let me just tell you what else is going on in the show. Ron Coomer is going to come on at 11 o'clock. That's 9 a.m. West Coast time. He will come on from the hotel, talk about this Cubs stretch, but also follow up and talk about the Dodgers a little bit. Clayton Kershaw was brilliant yesterday. But also follow up on our conversation last week with Steve Greenberg and the article about Coom. I just think Coom is a treasure. This is the thing. I think Coom is a treasure of this city, and that article did a lot for me in terms of like crystallizing the entire history of it and why he is the way he is as a guy and as a partner. So, and it all, of course, has a baseball backdrop to the man's life. So I want to talk about that with him, and we will do so at 11 o'clock. At 11:40, as just about always, somewhere in that final hour, we will get Cam connected with Chris Kamka, the Sultan of Stat from NBC Sports Chicago. Another gem, another absolute treasure in this baseball town. So we'll talk to Kamka in the 11 o'clock hour. Jim Callis from MLB.com, MLB Pipeline. I know he was on yesterday with Inside the Clubhouse, but that's okay because there's a lot to talk to Jim about. Yesterday, he talked with David and with Bruce about the draft and who the Cubs and or Sox might take in the first round and educated a lot of us, and that's always helpful. But here's an opportunity to talk to Jim about the systems. Let's talk about the prospects in the Cubs system. Let's talk about the prospects in the White Sox system. Let's talk about how good Oscar Colas and Colson Montgomery might be. How good, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong and Owen Casey might be. Let's talk about that with one of the best guys to talk about prospects with in all of baseball. And before all of that, at 9:40, we'll talk to James Fox. James Fox from Sox Machine and from Future Sox, and that collaboration, that mashup is killing it these days. But James knows things about the White Sox very, very well and very much in depth. Some on the big league club, some on the system, and we'll do more draft with him. And he will actually, you know, give us a thought on the Cubs draft as well. So we'll do some draft with James Fox and some big league White Sox with him, and then systems with Callis. And then just, you know, conversation and Cubs with Coomer and conversation and odd statistical nuggets with Kamka. Before that, you guys, me, chatting now. White Sox Cubs from the past few days, the week that was. If you'd like to discuss, we can do that. And also this, Wilson Contreras is an all-star starter at catcher. It's awesome. Tim Anderson is an all-star starter at shortstop. That's also awesome. Love it. Each team got one. Who else should get in? Reserves get announced tonight, 5:30 Eastern time, I do believe. So that's 4:30 our time. Who's going to get in? Who should get in? And you can make the case for me via numbers if you like. And that's cool. And we can certainly look at that, compare folks on their positions. But remember, this is the All-Star Game. This is about praise. I love the All-Star Game. This is about the people you want to see, the players you want to see. You are allowed to have a vote. In fact, you do have a vote, and you made him. And now, you know, a lot of guys could be there based purely on merit, and they will be, and they should be, but also it is a it's an exhibition game. I love that Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols are going to be there as honorary captains. That's very cool. But tell me who the best players on the Cubs and the Sox in this first half are and who deserves to be there as a member of the All-Star roster for the National League and for the American League. So you got a Cub, you got a Sox that you want to talk about as somebody who deserves to be there. You can add that to the mix right now at 312-644-6767. That's the phone number. That's also the number of the Tech Zone, which is brought to you by Rose and Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at roseandhyundai.com. Johnny Cueto is awesome. Just, I've always enjoyed him, and but really getting a chance to watch him as much as we have this year. First of all, stylistically, that, I mean, that's the thing. The joy to watch that dude. My goodness. Sometimes it's a three-quarter delivery. Sometimes it is an over-the-top delivery. Sometimes there's a quick pitch. Sometimes there's a big leg kick. Sometimes there's a short leg kick. Sometimes there's the full backspin where he really does look like Luis Tiant. But the thing about Luis Tiant, and the Luis Tiant comp has been made for a lot of years for Johnny Cueto. And for anybody who doesn't know Luis Tiant, he was brilliant as a Cleveland Indian at the time, member of the Boston Red Sox, a Cuban starting pitcher with a crazy delivery, who also had a rubber arm and just pitched and pitched and pitched and pitched and was really, really good and really fun to watch. And Cueto, Dominican and not Cuban, but the comp to Tiant has been made a lot in Cueto's career, and it makes a lot of sense. But anybody who remembers Tiant, he had a crazy delivery that he repeated every single time. Cueto is all over the place. He's all there's who's like him? I'm seriously. Who are the guys in the history of this game who threw it as differently, as strangely, and as effectively in so many different ways as him? I don't know the answer to that. I'll have to ask Coom when we talk to Coom. Oh, I got to get baseball bona fides from Coom, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We'll hit him on both those.
Yes, we will. Make a note, Sean Sears, for God's sakes. I was at a concert last night. I need your mind. Yeah, I need you to be sharp for me today.
I got you.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you. But there's nobody like Cueto. And, oh, by the way, he's made 10 starts. He's gone 6 innings in 9 of them. 9 of them. He's given up 3 earned runs or less in 9 of those 10 starts. He has been the most reliable starting pitcher on the White Sox. He has. The most reliable starting pitcher. Dylan Cease has been the most dominant. And Dylan Cease has the best stuff, by the way, and has very good numbers, etc. And it is the guy that you're like, oh, it's Cease Day. All right. But Cueto has been the most reliable and the most consistent. It's unbelievable. A 2.91 ERA over 68 innings. This is how you know he's special and unique and fun. Praise from teammates and the manager, sure. Praise from those around him, sure. 8 shutout innings, by the way, yesterday. He's the first starting pitcher for the White Sox to even make an out, record an out in the 8th of any kind during the course of the year. But then this is Tucker Barnhart, who used to play with Cueto in Cincinnati and was part of the Tigers being dominated by Cueto yesterday. How was that catching or, you know, hitting against Cueto after he just shoved it up their giggy? Listen to Tucker Barnhart. It's a lot of fun, to be honest. You just got your ass kicked, dude. It's a lot of fun, to be honest. It's tough. It's fun because it's a challenge, is what he says. He's got all kinds of arms and legs coming at you. I've known Johnny for a long time, and he's fun to face. That's good. I'm glad you had a good time. Now go back and grab some bench.
All sorts of arms and legs coming out.
I love it. That's the way it feels when you're up there. It's like, oh, man, there's an arm. Oof, there's a leg. I don't know. There's a pitch. Oh, damn it. It's by me. He threw it by me. He only throws 93 now. Used to be 97. But, you know, when you got an arm and a leg and then 93, it feels much more difficult, I suppose. One more thing on that White Sox-Tigers game, by the way. Son of a rocket. Kobe Clemens, son of a rocket, ought to be a better pitcher than that. Come on, man. You can't go out there and be the position player pitcher and just lollipop that up there when you have Clemens on the back of your jersey. You can't do that. I'm sorry. I know the concern is that Kobe, who's playing a lot of first base for the Tigers, is going to blow out his arm if he really is over there throwing hard. But I'm sorry, man. Can you imagine? No. It's like there's a little Marichal out there on the mound. He does the high leg kick and throws it 47. Yeah, no! I will not have it. Don't let Kobe pitch unless he's going to rear back and fire.
Well, you know the dugout was probably giving it to him afterwards, too.
It's the second time out there. Second time out there doing that. My God, you know, son of a rocket, you know, should be better. Just got to let that fly. I was talking about Clemens with somebody yesterday at the ballpark during the endless reams of baseball conversation that were taking place all day, of course. Do you know that the Astros, a lot of the Astros guys work out at Clemens's house?
They really?
Clemens built himself an unbelievable training complex in the final few years of his career. As he was, you know, holding teams hostage and playing one year at a time for the Yankees and the Astros and people like that. Now I'm going to retire. All right, no, I'm not. He was Brett Farving his way through the last 4 to 5 years of his career, and it drove me crazy. I hate stuff like that, but so it goes. So that's what Clemens was doing. And so he never knew where he was going to be, so he rehabbed on his own. He worked out on his own. He built himself with all the money an incredible facility at his home, like on his ranch there in Texas. And, of course, he had all his sons playing ball, and they would all work there. And now the Astros go there, and they have gone there apparently for several years. So still very connected to MLB and a guy that we've had on the show, a guy we should have on the show again sometime. I enjoyed talking to the Rocket. All right, 312-644-6767 is the phone number. I've got a couple things from last night's Cubs game I want to talk to you about. But let's hear about your all-star reserves from the north and the south side. If you want to talk about anything Cubs and Sox related, this is a good moment for you to get in. And frankly, we're guest heavy, so you should do it. At 312-644-6767, James Fox from Future Sox and Sox Machine coming up at 940. I'll give you who I think, and I'd love to hear from you about your all-star reserves Cubs and Sox right here. Hit and Run, 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Jose on a line to right field, and it carries over Castro. Vaughn comes home. Robert is there as well. That was a seed that kept on flying, and it's 6-0.
That is Jason Benetti on the call for the White Sox. Jose Abreu with the two-run double. That one over the head of the Tigers outfielder yesterday. And Abreu has been really, really good of late. There's not enough power. It is disappointing in that way. You know that. But the batting average has been really good over the past 6 to 8 weeks. And Abreu's playing his butt off. He is. There's still some bad moments. Interesting, I had a good conversation with Steve Stone on Friday with Danny Parkins, as we do. Parkins and Spiegel, 2 to 6 here in the afternoons. And we talked about a rough night that Abreu had had the night before where he had some two-strike anxiety and swung wildly at an 0-2 pitch from Soto, the Tigers' closer, and went down in the ninth inning. There was also a base-running gaffe. And, I mean, the dude, first of all, is human. Second of all, there's very few people that I respect more on either team in this town than Jose Abreu. The way that he has played, the way that he shows up in big moments, usually what the numbers have been in high leverage, etc. He has gotten better on defense. And of course, the insane story of him even getting here and becoming a member of the White Sox after 10 years of playing really, really well in the Cuban League, and then the harrowing and well-told, oft-told story of his emigration here. So when you see Abreu play like that, you know something's up. And I don't know if you guys have noticed, by the way, some of the post-game lingers from Jose Abreu sitting there in the dugout on that bench in the front right there, just sitting there and looking out at the field after a loss where a rally comes up short or an opportunity has been missed. And Abreu sometimes just sits there and stares out at the field, feeling it. You can tell how much he's feeling it, and we know that he feels that. So, look, I think the guy's a terrific player, and would be a great representative for the White Sox at the All-Star game. I don't think he's going to get there because there are some other folks who are more deserving numbers-wise, but we'll see what happens tonight at 5:30. I've been asking for you to give me your All-Star reserves at 312-644-6767. Dylan Cease. Now, they don't announce a starting pitcher at the same time that they announce the other starters, which, of course, happened on Friday. So we'll see who the starting pitcher is for the American League. Probably, if the timing is going to work out, Justin Verlander will get that nod, and it's tough to argue with that as an 11-3 guy with a 2 ERA, thrown 103 innings, given up only 71 hits. The whip is 0.87. Just, and it's remarkable to see. And talk about a guy who checks every box in terms of the legend, the excitement for an exhibition game. Verlander gives you that as well as the excellence. You could also go Shane McClanahan of the Rays, who has been unbelievable on the year and especially in the last 4 to 5 weeks. Oh my goodness, that guy's just been outrageous. There's some talk and desire for Shohei Ohtani to be that guy, which is more ceremonial and more fun, perhaps. And it's funny because last night, Clayton Kershaw was brilliant going into the eighth inning, striking out 10 for the Dodgers against the Cubs. And there's some talk and a big push being made for Clayton Kershaw as the starter for the National League because he's Clayton Kershaw. So Kershaw Verlander would be pretty damn cool. Are they the most deserving in league from each league? Not in the National League. I mean, Sandy Alcantara is that dude.
Sandy is for sure that dude. He's running away with the Cy Young. Could honestly get some MVP votes this year.
We'll see how the Marlins
turn this around to make me sound better. But yes, yes,
you need that.
Yeah.
To sound better. But Sandy's been so good. Sandy went at least 7 innings. I believe it's been 11 straight starts.
Yeah, it's 11 straight starts.
11 straight starts of at least 7.
He's unreal.
And last time out in the 8th inning, as he finished the 8th inning, he threw a pitch at 102.
102 miles an hour.
On the last pitch of the game.
He's been unreal.
And the stuff moves like crazy. He's an absolute horse. And by that, I mean that he has 4 legs and he has a mane. There's lots of hair on the back of his neck. No. It's a horse in the pitching sense, Spiegel. Come on. And Alcantara's been filthy. And I know some people want Tony Gonsolin of the Dodgers, who has the lowest ERA in the majors and is 11-0 and is a great story. His whip is unbelievable. He's only given up 48 hits in 88 innings. But, you know, Gonsolin, good for you. Congratulations. You made the team. Here you go. Don't give the kid a start.
Yeah, no, come on.
Don't give him a start. See, here's the thing. I am of a few different minds about the All-Star game. And maybe you're hearing me kind of vacillate a little because I love it. I love being able to think about it and talk about it. You know why? Because I like praise. I do like praise. Not just because it's a Sunday morning and it is right to give praise. It does feel right to give praise to the ones that deserve it at 9:30 on a Sunday morning. It really does. But I also... There's a moment, and maybe you have it somewhere in there, when you realized, oh, these are just the best from around the league and everybody's there. That's cool. When you were a kid and you were watching and you see the pregame introductions, that's a must. It is an absolute must. And maybe it's not a must for you anymore at this point in your life, but if you've got kids who are into it, make sure they see the pregame introductions. And just to see, I love that every team gets a guy. I love it. They should get a guy. They don't have to start. They don't even have to play, frankly. Not everybody needs to get in the game. I don't think everybody, I mean, most managers will try to get everybody in the game. But, it's congratulations. You made the team. Good for you. You're new. You're a fringe guy, but you're here. Okay, great. Congratulations. Enjoy these 3 days. Enjoy hobnobbing around with these other all-stars, feeling the connectivity, feeling like you've made it, your arrival, you're involved. Good for you. Here's an introduction. Now grab some bench and watch the best in the game play. So when I talk about people making it, like I'm glad that Miggy and Pujols are there and they'll each get an at-bat. they should not get more than one at bat. They should each only get one at bat. That's it. And Miggy's having a much better year than Albert. Miggy can still hit. A lot of it is singles. A lot of it is the opposite way, but that's what he's done his entire life. But I enjoy the ceremony. I enjoy the pomp and the circumstance. Who doesn't love some good pomp? Huh? Come on. Dylan Cease for the White Sox should make it. Jose Abreu is on the fringe. It's got to be Cease, says a texter. Cease, that's it from Chicago. This texter says Ian Happ should be an all-star. Ian Happ should absolutely be in the mix among National League outfielders. Without a doubt, he has had a really, really good year. He's fourth among all qualified National League outfielders in OPS. Fourth.
And that's a real crowded position, man.
That's Mookie Betts, who's a starter. Juan Soto. Kyle Schwarber will absolutely be an all-star.
I've heard that name before.
He haunts me. He absolutely haunts me. Did a segment about it
right
on the weekday show. I guess Thursday it was, after he had two straight nights of two homers. Is he still sitting at 27? Yeah, 27 homers.
27 still.
And yeah. I know the batting average is low, and it's going to be. But the OPS is at 858. He's slugging 523. The bat speed is ridiculous. The power is absurd. The terror that he puts in the hearts and minds of the opposition is real. And the Cubs could not figure out how to simply let him be the best version of himself.
Do you think he figures it out here if they do let him out? Or is this something that we wouldn't see this version of Schwarber here on the north side?
Kevin Long, the hitting coach in Washington when he got traded there, when he signed there for the one-year deal, and Kevin Long, who is now also the hitting coach in Philly, he connected with Kyle. And clearly there was nobody here who connected so cleanly and so clearly with Kyle. And Kyle is one of those guys who got overwhelmed by being given too much data, too many different perspectives. You remember Albert Almora talking to Bruce Levine a couple of weeks ago about that exact thing, about some dark times here as a young hitter,
right,
when he couldn't figure it out. And he had, in his words, he had a lot of different voices telling him a lot of different things. It's a very complicated thing when you make it complicated. And when you're somebody who needs it to be simple, like Schwarber, the myriad voices that you hear and perspectives can really screw you up just too much. They almost broke him, sent him back down. He had to go back down to the minors, did Kyle Schwarber, after coming up and being a Paul Bunyan-esque superhero with all that power in the postseason in 15. And then in 16, missing 5 months and being able to come back and hit well in the World Series, yada, yada. Almost broke him. So would it have happened here? Depends on who the voice was. You know, is it possible that Greg Brown, the hitting coach, now would connect with Kyle Schwarber and figure out what he needs and just give him that? And Kyle would be able to keep all the other voices out? Maybe. But Kyle knows a lot of people in the front office. Kyle knew Theo and Jed really well. They would talk to him. Other people would talk to him. And you know, other people in the system knows Rossi really well. Rossi would talk to him. I don't know. So, no, it might not have happened, but it shouldn't have needed to happen, if you get my drift. It was already there inside Schwarber. Somebody just needed to help it stay simple and come out. So Ian Happ for the Cubs, I think, absolutely should be considered. David Robertson should be considered, but we'll see. He's part of a bullpen that blew it the other night. Obviously on Friday, he and then Rowan Wick, a tough one again last night. I have expressed it before, my lack of trust in Rowan Wick, and it is vast. Oh, whew. I do not trust Rowan Wick. I don't. And I have a hard time trusting him long term to figure it out and become steadier, more stable, etc. Of all the closers in baseball who are in the top 20 in saves, David Robertson at number 18, tied at 18 with 12 saves, has a whip just over one. That's walks plus hits per innings pitched of 102. An ERA just over 2.10. Difficult to look at ERA, obviously, for a reliever in the fairly limited sample. But Robertson has pitched in 31 games. He's 12 for 17 with save opportunities. Fun fact, the worst ERA and the worst whip of anybody in the top 20 in saves in all of MLB. Think about it. Top 20 closers in terms of saves. Who has the worst ERA and the worst walks plus hits per innings pitch? Sean, do you know the answer?
Is it one Liam Hendricks?
No, it is not. Liam actually has pretty good ERA at 2.6 and whip down at 1.05. There have been some big blow-ups for Liam, but just a couple. 16 of 19 in save opportunities. No, by those numbers, the worst closer still getting a lot of saves is Craig Kimbrell.
Oh, I should have known that.
15 saves for Kimbrell, ERA of 4.66, whip of 1.52.
Ride the Kimbrell waves, man.
Yeah, nobody in the top 25 of saves has a worse whip than Craig Kimbrell. At number 25 in saves with 9 of them is Aroldis Chapman and a 1.63 whip. So he and Kimbrell have some saves, but some bad numbers. And in fact, in New York, Chapman's not even the closer anymore. The closer in that top 20 of saves with the best ERA and the best whip is Clay Holmes of the New York Yankees with a 0.46 ERA, a 0.74 whip. That's why Chapman is not getting that job back anytime soon. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. So what do we decide? Ian Happ for the Cubs, Dylan Cease for the White Sox, and I think that might be it. We'll see if there's more. I love Nico Horner's year. Thrilled for Nico Horner that he is having that kind of year. And the way that he is playing defensively is huge and absolutely matters.
Bogart too?
No, put Bogarts at second. Let's talk about that later. Our Bogarts, Correa, and Trey Turner, who you're getting a good close look at, those options, which one you want, and why Bogarts might end up being the most likely of them. Love to talk about that a little bit later as well. It is Spiegs here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. And we'll talk to James Fox from Future Sox and Sox Machine next about the White Sox draft, a little Cubs draft as well, and some Sox big league stuff. Keep it right here on 670 The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
2-2. That is laced into right field for a base hit. Ellis jogs home to score. Montgomery in at second. Colas at first with an RBI single. And the Dash lead it now 5-1.
Oscar Colas on the highlight right there. The White Sox have him. Part of the next wave of the Cuban connection that is down there and playing in the minors and could come up and could help at any point. Exactly when? I don't know. We'll talk to Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline about the systems themselves for the White Sox and the Cubs. We will focus on that with Jim a little bit later on. But a chance to talk some White Sox, little system, little draft, and some White Sox big league stuff with James Fox right now, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. James from Future Sox and from Sox Machine. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, Speaks. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. So I know you love the draft, and I know you've made full-on mock drafts of the entire first round. I'm looking at your latest, which I think just came out this morning over on Sox Machine, or maybe it came out yesterday, but I'm looking at that. I'm imagining your house like Matt Nagy's basement, James, with just walls covered in scouting reports, various schematics, maybe some Codify printouts, some Baseball Savant percentile stuff blown up real big. Do I have it right? Is that your basement?
Yeah, just the basement, though. Yeah, I've been relegated to certain areas of the house.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How does one prep for an entire first-round mock draft? How much of these guys have you gotten a chance to watch film on? Good for you.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of them. I mean, it's film, obviously, because, you know, I'm not out, like, traveling the country watching high school players like Jim Callis is able to. But, I mean, Josh Nelson helps a lot, too. So, like, joining up with Sox Machine was very helpful because I will say he's like the much bigger fan of like college baseball, the sport. Yeah. Whereas like I would mostly just follow like guys who are going to be taken. Right. So, you know, you get the early list and you're like, okay, these are the guys that are supposed to go high. These are the guys that I have to pay attention to. And then, yeah, you form opinions at that point, but you know, I'm not watching college baseball regularly. Mm-hmm. But I think I have a pretty good idea of the guys that are going to go next Sunday, though.
Yeah. Well, tell me, who do you like at the very top of this draft that maybe the Cubs can dream about at 7? But obviously the White Sox down there at number 26 cannot. Who do you like at the very, very top?
So I think the Cubs, like the dream scenario is Cam Collier is Lou Collier's son. He's 17, but wow. You know, he reclassified out of high school and he played at one of the best JUCOs in the country this year. And then he just played at on the Cape Cod League too. But it seems like he might be gone now. That was like the guy that was super rumored to the Cubs. And now there's talk with the Pirates. I think another Tamar Johnson might have the best hit tool in the entire draft. He's a high school hitter out of Georgia, but he's probably going to be a second baseman, but he can hit. So I think those two guys are best case scenario for the Cubs. But I mean, like a lot of people think it's like there's seven hitters up there at the top and any, so like the Cubs might have an easy call at 7, mm-hmm. but it does depend. Cause there, like one more is Elijah Green, who is former NFL player, Eric Green's son. He could want more money than I feel like the Cubs, like he's supposed to go top 3, but if he doesn't and he's the guy left for the Cubs, like the Cubs have, they can spend $5.7 million right there at their slot. And I really don't think they want to go over. So that could be a potential issue for them. But they're going to get somebody really good at that spot. Just stay and take the hitter that's left, essentially.
How much can they go over if they want? That obviously was something that they did a ton in Boston, similar members of the Brain Trust way back when, and then the rules changed. They can go over, but just a little, right?
Yeah, so like they can. It's just, so even though they have the 7th pick in the draft, they have the 10th most bonus pool space because they don't have these extra picks because they're like a big market team. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's teams like the Twins and the Royals picking right behind them that have extra, they have extra picks. So that means they also have like an extra $1.5 million to $2 million to spend. So, you know, like I think a kid like that could fall and then all of a sudden he's 9 to the Royals and you're like, oh my God, how did this happen? Well, it's because they can pay him $6 million with the 9th pick. And the Cubs could, too, but they might not. Last year, they went over slot in the 2nd round for James Trianto, who's a high school hitter, been pretty good.
Yep.
They gave him like $2 million. If they want to do that again with someone, they're probably not going to go over at 7, I wouldn't think.
Hmm. So you mentioned Elijah Green, son of Eric Green. I know that Drew Jones, D-R-U-W, who spells it just like his dad, Andrew, without the A in the N, is up there. And Cam Collier, the son of Lou Collier. My God, I know there's a Blauser.
Matt Holliday's son's going to go top 3, probably.
My Jackson Holliday, the shortstop out of Stillwater, is Matt Holliday's kid. There's a little Blauser here along the way. Who else? There's got to be a ton. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, there's Kumar Rocker, too. So it is like it's a big bloodlines draft.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes it kind of interesting. Drew Jones is definitely the best player, but when Baltimore picks one, you just never know. You know, the one year, Adley Rutschman was the clear-cut top guy, and they took him. But every other year, they've kind of taken a guy down the board, paid under slot, and then, you know, spent throughout. So we're probably not going to know who Baltimore's taking until one of the big reporters breaks it like a half hour before the draft starts.
Are they as weird as it seems? The Orioles as a scouting and development bunch, and historically they have screwed up so much. That's where you would go to find somebody who a team wasn't getting the most out of. Like, you got Arrieta, you got Gausman, like, you dreamed of getting their guys. Are they still that way, the Orioles?
No, I think it's different under Mike Elias because he was in Houston, but they prioritize hitters. They don't take many pitchers. I mean, he did the same thing in Houston. When people don't remember, like, when they took Carlos Correa, that was like, you know, he was like the sixth or seventh best player in that class, and they underslotted him instead of taking Byron Buxton. And then they, you know, I think they got Lance McCullers with the money that they saved. But that's the way Baltimore has operated. So they're just like, their system's really good. It's just not conventional.
They've won 7 in a row in the big league level, and have clearly turned a big old corner in their their rebuild. All right, looking down at the White Sox, at number 26, what do you think they're targeting at this point, James?
So I went college pitching today in the mock draft. I did Connor Prelip, who was a guy that looked like a potential top 10 pick, but he had Tommy John surgery. The issue with the college pitching class is that so many of them got hurt. And so to the point where I actually think the college pitching class is underrated, because like, there's not going to be one that goes in the top 10, but there's going to be a bunch that go 25 to 50. And a lot of those guys, if healthy, could have went a lot higher. So like, if I had to bet on it, I would say that the White Sox go college pitching, and there's like a bunch of names. There's Gabriel Hughes out of Gonzaga. There's Prelip, who I mentioned. Cole Horton went on a big run for Oklahoma in the College World Series. So there's just like a lot of options there. But the one name, if they want to do similar to last year, Tucker Tolman is a switch hitting prep infielder out of South Carolina. They've been linked to pretty heavily. You know, they've had a lot of success. They took Colson Montgomery last year. So, you know, I could see them going the high school prep route again and then doing pitching like after, like in the second round and throughout the rest. I think it just, you know, when you pick 26, like, they do kind of have to let the board come to them. But the thing with the baseball draft, and we mentioned it, they don't have much money. They have enough money to get who they need, but they have like the 27th pool. So they have the third smallest bonus pool, like just over $6 million to spend, basically. So, you know, there's some guys that might be sitting there at 26, and fans are going to be like, oh, man, like even a Kumar Rocker. Like, take Kumar Rocker. But, I mean, you just don't know what that guy's asking for. And if he's not asking for slot, then – you know, it might kind of tie the White Sox hands a little bit.
So great job on the draft with all the prep, and it's interesting stuff. But here we are in the middle of what should be a White Sox championship window, and they're 3 games under 500 through 83 games. How many games? 83 games.
I know.
What do you believe it's still in there? Where are you on your hopes of them winning the division?
I think it changes like every day. I mean, I think, you know, we're gonna know a lot more by Sunday when we're doing our draft show, I think. I mean, I think we've just been sitting around waiting for the run to happen, and it never happens. And, like, I don't think Minnesota and Cleveland are that daunting, obviously. I mean, the White Sox have been awful, and you've talked about it. And, like, they should be absolutely buried. And in any other division, they would be. But they're not. So, you know, I almost feel like it would be easier for fans, like, if they were buried, but they keep hanging around. And I kind of feel like, you know, I kind of feel like if they continue to hang around, they're going to buy because playoff appearances are sacred, and you hired Tony, and they have a shot, but I'm not confident just because, you know, all the little chinks in the armor are exposed. Like, if they were hitting homers and scoring runs, we wouldn't be as worried about all of the defensive deficiencies and the issues with that Tony has on the margins and the dugout and all those little things. But when you don't hit, all those things are exposed, and all those things have been exposed quite a bit this year.
Yeah, they sure have. James, great stuff, man. Appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time. And people can read you on Future Sox and Sox Machine, and then you and Mike Rankin with the Future Sox podcast, yes?
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. And then me and Josh Nelson are hosting a live Twitter Spaces for the during the first round next Sunday night.
There you go. That's awesome. Thanks, James. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Speaks.
All right, you got it. It's James Fox from Sox Machine and Future Sox. It is Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Yeah, those White Sox issues are so well known, and I've discussed them so much, and it's frustrating. And, like, everybody's waiting for the run, and the run does not come. But the Sox are in a stretch right now that really matters. It really matters. How are they doing so far? We'll talk about that a little bit in our next hour. Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline at 10:20. We'll go around the league with some fun stuff that you need to hear from big games around the league. We'll do that, and we'll talk with you at 312-644-6767 about the White Sox and the challenges as of right now and what the chances are for them to turn it around. Keep it here on Hit and Run on the Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
2-2. That is laced into right field for a base hit. Ellis jogs home to score. Montgomery in at second. Colas at first with an RBI single, and the Dash lead it now 5-1.
Oscar Colas on the highlight right there. The White Sox have him part of the next wave of the Cuban connection that is down there and playing in the minors and could come up and could help at any point. Exactly when? I don't know. We'll talk to Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline about the systems themselves for the White Sox and the Cubs. We will focus on that with Jim a little bit later on. But a chance to talk some White Sox, little system, little draft, and some White Sox big league stuff with James Fox right now, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. James from Future Sox and from Sox Machine. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, Speaks. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. So I know you love the draft, and I know you've made full-on mock drafts of the entire first round. I'm looking at your latest, which I think just came out this morning over on Sox Machine, or maybe it came out yesterday, but I'm looking at that. I'm imagining your house like Matt Nagy's basement, James, with just walls covered in scouting reports, various schematics, maybe some codify printouts, some baseball savant percentile stuff blown up real big. Do I have it right? Is that your basement?
Yeah, just the basement, though. Yeah, I've been relegated to certain areas of the house.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How does one prep for an entire first-round mock draft? How much of these guys have you gotten a chance to watch film on? Good for you.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of them. I mean, it's film, obviously, because, you know, I'm not out, like, traveling the country watching high school players like Jim Callis is able to. But, I mean, Josh Nelson helps a lot, too. So, like, joining up with Sox Machine was very helpful because I will say he's like the much bigger fan of like college baseball, the sport. Yeah. Whereas like I would mostly just follow like guys who are going to be taken. Right. So, you know, you get the early list and you're like, okay, these are the guys that are supposed to go high. These are the guys that I have to pay attention to. And then, yeah, you form opinions at that point, but you know, I'm not watching college baseball regularly. Mm-hmm. But I think I have a pretty good idea of the guys that are going to go next Sunday, though.
Yeah, well tell me, who do you like at the very top of this draft that maybe the Cubs can dream about at 7, but obviously the White Sox down there at number 26 cannot? Who do you like at the very, very top?
So I think the Cubs, like the dream scenario is Cam Collier is Lou Collier's son. He's 17, but wow. You know, he reclassified out of high school and he played at one of the best JUCOs in the country this year. And then he just played it on the Cape Cod League too. But it seems like he might be gone now. That was like the guy that was super rumored to the Cubs. And now there's talk of the Pirates. I think another Tamar Johnson might have the best hit tool in the entire draft. He's a high school hitter out of Georgia, but he's probably going to be a second baseman, but he can hit. So I think those two guys are best case scenario for the Cubs. But I mean, like a lot of people think it's like there's seven hitters up there at the top and any, so like the Cubs might have an easy call at 7, mm-hmm. but it does depend. Cause there, like one more is Elijah Green, who is former NFL player, Eric Green's son. He could want more money than I feel like the Cubs, like he's supposed to go top 3, but if he doesn't and he's the guy left for the Cubs, like the Cubs have, they can spend $5.7 million right there at their slot. And I really don't think they want to go over. So that could be a potential issue for them. But they're going to get somebody really good at that spot. Just stay and take the hitter that's left, essentially.
How much can they go over if they want? That obviously was something that they did a ton in Boston, similar members of the Brain Trust way back when, and then the rules changed. They can go over, but just a little, right?
Yeah, so like they can. It's just, so even though they have the 7th pick in the draft, they have the 10th most bonus pool space because they don't have these extra picks because they're like a big market team. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's teams like the Twins and the Royals picking right behind them that have extra, they have extra picks. So that means they also have like an extra $1.5 million to $2 million to spend. So, you know, like I think a kid like that could fall and then all of a sudden he's 9 to the Royals and you're like, oh my God, how did this happen? Well, it's because they can pay him $6 million with the 9th pick. And the Cubs could too, but they might not. Last year they went over slot in the 2nd round for James Triantos, a high school hitter. Been pretty good. They gave him like $2 million. If they want to do that again with someone, they're probably not going to go over at 7, I wouldn't think.
Mm. So you mentioned Elijah Green, son of Eric Green. I know that Drew Jones, D-R-U-W, who spells it just like his dad, Andrew, without the A in the N, is up there. And you, Cam Collier, the son of Lou Collier. My God, I know there's a Blauser.
Matt Holliday's son's going to go top 3 probably.
Mike Jackson Holliday, the shortstop out of Stillwater, is Matt Holliday's kid. There's a little Blauser here along the way. Who else? There's got to be a ton. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, well, there's Kumar Rocker too. So it is like a, it's a big bloodlines draft.
Yeah.
So that makes it kind of interesting. Drew Jones is definitely the best player, but when Baltimore picks one, you just never know. You know, the 1 year, Adley Rutschman was the clear-cut top guy, and they took him, but every other year, they've kind of taken a guy down the board, paid under slot, and then, you know, spent throughout. So we're probably not going to know who Baltimore's taking until one of the big reporters breaks it like a half hour before the draft starts.
Are they as weird as it seems? The Orioles as a scouting, like as a scouting and development bunch, and historically they have screwed up so much. That's where you would go to find somebody who a team wasn't getting the most out of. Like you got Arrieta, you got Gausman, like you dreamed of getting their guys. Are they still that way, the Orioles?
No, I think it's different under Mike Elias because he was in Houston, but they draft like, they don't draft weird, but they prioritize hitters. They don't take many pitchers. I mean, he did the same thing in Houston. When people don't remember, like when they took Carlos Correa, that was like, you know, he was like the 6th or 7th best player in that class, and they underslotted him instead of taking Byron Buxton. And then they, you know, I think they got Lance McCullers with the money that they saved. But that's the way Baltimore has operated. So they're just like, their system's really good. It's just not conventional.
They've won 7 in a row in the big league level and have clearly turned a big old corner in their rebuild. All right, looking down at the White Sox at number 26, what do you think they're targeting at this point, James?
So I went college pitching today in the mock draft. I did Connor Prelip, who was a guy that looked like a potential top 10 pick, but he had Tommy John surgery. The issue with the college pitching class is that so many of them got hurt. And so to the point where I actually think the college pitching class is underrated because, like, there's not going to be one that goes in the top 10, but there's going to be a bunch that go 25 to 50. And a lot of those guys, if healthy, could have went a lot higher. So, like, if I had to bet on it, I would say that the White Sox go college pitching. And there's, like, a bunch of names. There's Gabriel Hughes out of Gonzaga. There's Prelip, who I mentioned. Cole Horton went on a big run for Oklahoma in the College World Series. So there's just like a lot of options there. But the one name, if they want to do similar to last year, Tucker Thomann is a switch hitting prep infielder out of South Carolina. They've been linked to pretty heavily. You know, they've had a lot of success. They took Colson Montgomery last year. So, you know, I could see them going the high school prep route again and then doing pitching like after, like in the 2nd round and throughout the rest. I think it just, you know, when you pick 26, like they do kind of have to let the board come to them. But the thing with the baseball draft, and we mentioned it, they don't have much money. They have enough money to get who they need, but they have like the 27th pool. So they have the 3rd smallest bonus pool, like just over $6 million to spend basically. So, you know, there's some guys that might be sitting there at 26 and fans are going to be like, oh man, like even a Kumar Rocker, like take Kumar Rocker. But I mean, you just don't know what that guy's asking for. And if he's not asking for slot, then you know, it might kind of tie the White Sox hands a little bit.
So great job on the draft with all the prep, and it's interesting stuff. But here we are in the middle of what should be a White Sox championship window, and they're three games under 500 through 83 games. How many games? 83 games.
I know.
What do you believe it's still in there? Where are you on your hopes of them winning the division?
I think it changes like every day. I mean, I think, you know, we're gonna know a lot more by Sunday when we're doing our draft show, I think. I mean, I think we've just been sitting around waiting for the run to happen, and it never happens. And like I don't think Minnesota and Cleveland are that daunting, obviously. I mean, the White Sox have been awful, and you've talked about it. I mean, they should be absolutely buried. And in any other division, they would be. But they're not. So, you know, I almost feel like it would be easier for fans, like, if they were buried. But they keep hanging around, and I kind of feel like, you know, I kind of feel like if they continue to hang around, they're going to buy because playoff appearances are sacred, and you hired Tony, and, they have a shot. But I'm not confident just because, you know, all the little chinks in the armor are exposed. Like, if they were hitting homers and scoring runs, we wouldn't be as worried about all of the defensive deficiencies and the issues with that Tony has on the margins and the dugout and all those little things. But when you don't hit, all those things are exposed, and all those things have been exposed quite a bit this year.
Yeah, they sure have. James, great stuff, man. Appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time. And people can read you on Future Sox and Sox Machine, and then you and Mike Rankin with the Future Sox podcast, yes?
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. And then me and Josh Nelson are hosting a live Twitter Spaces for the during the first round next Sunday night.
There you go. That's awesome. Thanks, James. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Speaks.
All right, you got it. It's James Fox from Sox Machine and Future Sox. It is Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Yeah, those White Sox issues are so well known, and I've discussed them so much, and it's frustrating. And, like, everybody's waiting for the run, and the run does not come. But the Sox are in a stretch right now that really matters. It really matters. How are they doing so far? We'll talk about that a little bit in our next hour. Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline at 10:20. We'll go around the league with some fun stuff that you need to hear from big games around the league. We'll do that, and we'll talk with you at 312-644-6767 about the White Sox and the challenges as of right now and what the chances are for them to turn it around. Keep it here on Hit and Run on the Score.